time to thrive. Welcome to the Thriveology Podcast with Dr. Lee Bockham. Join us as we explore ways that you can thrive in your life, regardless of what life throws at you. It's your life. Time to live it.
Hi, this is Lee Bockham, Thriveologist. I'm a full-time Thriveologist, which means I'm constantly studying how people learn to thrive, how we thrive better, how we move beyond just the normal life to an exemplary life. How do we move from the stuck points, from the hurt points, to a higher life than even we had before those hurts? That really, for me, is the theory of thriving. It's not just how do you get back to where you were, but how do you get beyond where you've ever been and every step be about growth and development and getting better? Now, while I say I'm a full-time Thriveologist, meaning I'm always studying that, I'm a part-time thriver, which means that I don't always thrive the way I want to. And so part of my task is to keep teaching myself and learning and struggling and finding ways of thriving better. So we're here to do that together. We're here to examine some ways that you can thrive better in your life and examine some ways that I can find ways of thriving more in my life too. These past few weeks, we've been in a series about fear, and I got a lot of people writing saying, can you just tell me the shortcut ways of dealing with fear? So I wanted to do that with what I'm calling fear hacks. How do you hack fear so that it doesn't dominate your life? But let's start with a couple of presuppositions. One, let's start with the assumption that you cannot keep from having fear, that living a fearless life, a life without fear, is not possible. But you can live a life that is not dominated by fear. You can live a life that is not caught up in trying to avoid fear, of trying to let that be the limiter of your life. You can find ways of expanding beyond the fear. And that's really what we're after. And so as we're talking about these life hacks, don't hear me say, this is your way of avoiding fear, as much as this is your way of facing fear and not letting it dominate your life. We've talked about this for several weeks now, about how fear is just wired into our being and how we all have several places that are easily pricked that make us feel even more fearful. And so those are, it's kind of the background knowledge. If you didn't listen to those podcasts, please go back and listen to the last 3 weeks so you have a kind of a basic understanding of what we're talking about with this fear. Because as we talk about this, we want to have that as a backdrop, a mainframe of where we're going to deal with this, of how we're going to use the information to have a life that's less dominated by fear, that is less where you're less guided and you're less navigating around fear, because that's really the issue. It's not whether you have fear or not. We all have fear. The question is just how much it holds you back, how much it holds you down. I want you to do the same thing I've been doing and think back in your life about things you haven't done because of fear. I can think back on many times where I didn't ask a girl out or I didn't approach somebody at a party or I didn't try an activity or I didn't do something because fear held me back. And instead of saying, okay, that's just fear, I let fear convince me that that was something I shouldn't be doing, that I shouldn't try to do that. I shouldn't move forward with that. I let it limit me. And when I look back, when I think about what I have given up, it always goes back to the fact that I let fear cause me to give it up. That means I gave up my own personal responsibility for a lower place of living, a safer place of living. And when I say safer, I want to put that in quotations because it's really not safer. It just is a place we pretend is safer. That we pretend that not taking a risk is a safer place to be. When in reality, not taking a risk just keeps us locked into where we've always been, keeps us stuck in a place that limits our life. So how do we move beyond that? Well, that's the life hacks. Those are these for us, in talking about this, it's the fear hacks. How do we hack into our fear system and not cut it off? That's not possible. But how do we use it differently? How do we approach it differently? So let's talk about these fear hacks. These are my top 10 fear hacks. The first one is that the biggest antidote to fear is action. I mean, if you want to figure out how to short circuit all of this and only have one hack you need, it's take action. To take action means that you're moving against that fear place, what it's holding you back. So you just simply take action. Now, if you use that as the approach, ooh, I feel fear, I'll take action, we have to remember one thing. There are times when we should be fearful, right? When there is a real risk. I related to you the story about when we were at the Grand Canyon and I had little kids running towards the edge of the canyon, and my fear response was to grab them and hold on to them, not because they were actually safe and it wouldn't have been a problem, but because they were not safe. There really was a risk. Or I think about the times when, you know, I've started out in traffic and I didn't see that car and I have a sudden rush of fear. Thank goodness I have something that's moderating our actions that says, whoa, something is a threat. I've been running in a trail before and I've had, you know, something happen that I started slipping, and the fear that gripped me. At one point I was kind of headed towards kind of an edge of a cliff that would have been a nice 15, 20 foot drop. And the fear caused me to grab hold instantly of something and hold on. So recognize that what I'm talking about here is not that kind of fear. That's authentic fear, not existential fear. What we're really talking about is existential fear. And the way we deal with existential fear is, and that's the fear of how do I exist in the world in smaller ways or bigger ways. That's when we want to start with taking action. One of the things that I do in my professional life is to work with couples who are trying to save their marriage. And one of the things I often say is, do something. Start taking action. Being immobilized by your fears is only hastening the problems with your marriage. Do something. Now let's figure out what to do. But let's start with the assumption you got to take action. There's got to be action. So the antidote to fear, if you want to kind of move it all into one simple hack, is take action. You break it into small steps, and I don't care how small the step has to be, but you start with that one little step. So I had someone who said to me, you know what, I really wanted to get into shape. I said, oh, great, what's stopping you? And they said, well, I'm a little afraid to go to the gym. So, okay, well, what's really wrong with that? I don't understand it. I don't know it. I don't know how to do those things. I said, well, what if you were to set up an appointment with someone there? Oh, I'm scared to do that. Why is that? And we backed it down until the first small step was just to call and ask what the prices were. That was it. One small step. What's the price? And then I asked this person to imagine going and choosing to sign up. So she first asked the price. A little while later on, she decided to go and take a tour. Just a tour. Didn't have to sign up. Just take a tour. Took a tour, and then I suggested maybe check and see if there's a free trial. There was a free trial. She tried it for a couple of weeks, and in that time, they actually gave her a trainer. Why? Because they knew if they could get the habit in there, it would begin to grow, and it wouldn't be fearful anymore. It would just be daily. And so that's part of the shift we're trying to make, is take any action, and any action is the antidote to fear. If we remember just that piece, we would all be moving rapidly towards the life we want to have instead of stuck where we are. So hack number one, take action. Okay, so hack number two is to use fear as an indicator of the direction to travel. Go toward the fear, not away from it. We already use it as an indicator of what to avoid, right? But I'm suggesting we reverse it. That we turn around the compass setting and we go toward the fear. In some ways, you know, if you've ever seen the dowsers, people who believe that they can take some object in their hand and it'll lead them to water or to gold or to whatever they want to find. And so those dowsers will walk towards the indicator. And as the indicator moves, they know they're headed in the right direction. And this is where I want you to kind of imagine fear. Fear is a place to move towards, not away from. And so it becomes a reverse of the way we often think of it. And so you think, okay, what do I need to do? What is the fear telling me not to do? I think about that in my personal life. You know, I've talked about this on here before. I've got a book on thriving that's been inside of me for a while. And oddly enough, my fears of getting it out there because it's important to me keep me from moving. And so I decided this past year that I had to move toward that. And so what did I do? I approached a publisher and I began a conversation that I could not get myself out of without really embarrassing myself. And so I moved myself towards that fear, which brings us to number three. The third hack is a little secret about fear. The bigger the fear, the more important the goal. The bigger the fear, the more important the goal. Think about this. Think back to even dating days, right? And, you know, there's someone there and you're looking at that person and you're going, I'm not really interested. You can talk to that person, right? There's nothing happens. You don't get tongue-tied. You don't get nervous. You're just talking to somebody. But the more attracted you are to them, the more attractive they are, the more you think there might be something there, the more that feeling builds in you that keeps you from moving. The bigger the fear is, because you begin to imagine other things happening, other future events happening. How might this unroll? How might we get closer together? And so as you start thinking about that, it begins to make it more and more important. And the more important it is, the bigger the fear becomes. And that's the piece that we often tend to forget, that the bigger that fear is, the more it's indicating how important it is to us. This book I have inside of me is incredibly important to me. And yet it's the one that I don't write. I've told this story a few times to people, but over the summer, I sat down intending to go ahead and write this book. Now, I've had parts of this book written for a long time, and you'll see it soon enough, but it's not ready yet. And over the summer, I carved out time. I got up every single morning in order to write, and guess what? I wrote another book instead. I wrote a book in an area that I was comfortable with, and it didn't really stretch me. It didn't really make me uncomfortable. It didn't really make me think, am I really putting out something that's forever? Because the next book is my big book. The next book is the one that I think puts me on a trajectory of where I want to spend my life in study and in helping others and thriving. And so I realized as I finished that other book that the reason it had been so easy was because it was in my comfort zone. Writing something that's important to me, that's critical to kind of my soul, is what eluded me, which is probably why I'm spending this time talking about fear. Because when I'm talking with you, I'm talking with me. I'm talking to myself and reminding myself of where I need to move towards. Okay, so the bigger the fear, the more important the goal is hack number three, which ties right into the using the fear as an indication of the direction to travel. Right. So as I'm looking at that book, what did I need to find a publisher? I approached a publisher at a conference, had a meeting with them, and made sure that we stayed in contact afterwards. The only way I could get out of a conversation with them was by embarrassing myself. So I moved towards the fear in that. So then number four raises the question of asking yourself, what's the best that can happen? And what's the worst that can happen? Those are two different ways of kind of reality testing fear. When you have a fear, like, okay, I'll write this book. Wow, I need to write this book. So what's the best thing that could happen? Oh, gosh, it could be a New York Times bestseller and everybody would love it and I could be asked to speak and all these other pieces. Well, what's the worst that could happen? The worst that could happen is it ends up in the bargain bin at the local store. And by the way, I've looked in the bargain bin and it would be pretty good company a lot of the time. And so that's the worst that would happen, right? So if that's the worst that would happen, could I accept that? Yes. The best that could happen, I can use that as motivation. And that begins to be some reality pointing because we tend to catastrophize when we're thinking about our fears. And when we start thinking about what is the worst that could happen, we actually have to name what really is the worst that could happen. What is the worst that could come of this? And then if we come up with some really bad stuff, we might decide we've got to mitigate that risk, but that doesn't mean we stay away from it. We just mitigate as much as we can. When I talk with people who are in extreme sports, and I say, you know, how do you do that? They tell me, I said, you know, do you even think about how bad it could be? And all of them tell me absolutely, which is why I prepare so much on the front side. Which is why I try to make sure that I reduce the risk as much as I can, and then I go for it. We have in our minds this idea that people who do those extreme things, that people who do big events, that people who do big things in their life have no fear. And what I've determined over time is that they have the same fear I do. They just move forward. They take action. They realize that where they need to go is laced with fear. And they mitigate the risk as much as they can, looking for what the upside is. So then use hack number 5, which is the helicopter view for perspective. Have others done this? And therefore, is there a real threat? Have other people written a book and published it and it flopped? Absolutely. I'd be in great company with best-selling authors who their first book didn't go anywhere. I know how many times people have taken the first step and it didn't work, enough to know that if it didn't work for me, I would just do another. We all have authors that we love who likely had a first book that didn't work out. So I take a helicopter view. Has this ever been done before? How many books a year are published? Thousands upon thousands upon thousands of books are published a year. It's been done before. People have failed at it before, and people have done just fine afterwards. So the helicopter view is to go up high and take a view around. Sometimes we get really caught up in our fear, and fear is one that reduces us, makes us smaller, looks at a much more small space. It focuses our vision until we're only aware of how we are, not that there are others around us. You know, think of those fears that people have. You know, they're sitting on a plane, petrified that something's going to happen to them, missing the fact that they're surrounded by other people who have done this. And by the way, it happens all day, every day, into the night, every night, with rare exceptions. If they've already made it to the airport, they have already escaped the most dangerous part of that trip. And yet, we reduce ourselves. I've watched people do it. They get so in a terror point in that seat because they've reduced it down to themselves in their small place instead of taking a helicopter view. What's this going to be like? Where are they trying to get to? What is the goal to get there? They're not just there for the plane ride. How can they take a helicopter view of the perspective and move to a higher place of understanding of that? It works with every fear when we can get out of the narrowed focus. That's what fear does to us. It narrows our focus. That's the intention of fear in a primitive way, to narrow our focus on dealing with what we see as the threat. But sometimes it narrows our focus so that we're not just dealing with the threat, we're focused on the threat to the exception of the possibilities. So imagine going up in the helicopter, taking a broader view. How many people have done this before? What is the real threat? And what is there to gain? What are you seeing as the possibility, the upside? That's that helicopter view. Okay, so then there's this idea. It's very closely related to that. Number 6 hack is use the time frame method. The time frame method is basically to ask yourself, will this matter in 3 days? Will this matter in 3 weeks? Will this matter in 3 months? And will it matter in 3 years? There are some things that we try to avoid, not have discussions with somebody, and that discussion would not matter in 3 days, certainly would not matter in 3 weeks. Everybody would have forgotten it in 3 months, and in 3 years, you have no idea what that conversation was about. So when we use those parameters, would this matter? You're probably going to get, you might get a yes on the front one or two, and then you're going to start going maybe. And if it's a really big deal, I mean, is this really going to matter? Then it may change how you do this. Right? There's some ways I could write this book in very quick ways. But will this book matter in 3 years? I hope so. So I spend some time on that, not avoid it, but take it seriously. There's so many things, though, where our fears are about things that won't matter even in 3 days, probably not even 3 hours, but we get locked into them. And so using the time frame method gets us away from that, gets us into a broader, expanded place. Okay, the number 7 hack is from Jack Canfield. Remind yourself of this. It's already a no. Whatever you're doing, it's already a no, because what we most want to avoid is getting a no. But it's already a no. But by asking, by doing, by trying, by taking it on, by making a request of somebody or something, then it might be a yes. So let's start with, it's already a no, right? If I don't do this, it's already a no. If I try it, it might still be a no, but it could be a yes, and the only way to get to a yes is by trying it. And so that's hack number 7, is just to simply remind yourself, I'm already at no. I have nothing to lose here. I have nothing to lose and everything to gain by doing this. Already a no. Okay, number eight hack is when we get down into the physical body of this. Remember to breathe through the fear. I talked about this in one of the other podcasts, but belly breathing, relaxed breathing. In fact, I have an app on my iPhone that gives me instructions, and I can follow the up and down motion to breathe in and breathe out. And I can do that through my chest, right? But I'll hyperventilate. I have to make sure I'm breathing through my diaphragm. And when I breathe through my diaphragm, breathe in and breathe out, it relaxes my body. Why is that? Because the primitive switches in our brain, when we're breathing through our belly, stops the fear response. It's like putting a brake on the fear mechanisms of our brain and our body at the same time. Our brain and our body all have the adrenal connection. And when we're breathing through our chest, we're telling our body that there is indeed a threat. When we're breathing through our stomach, through our diaphragm, we're telling our brain there is no threat. We're telling our body there is nothing to be worried about. And because of that, we can use that to our advantage. Remember, we have the sympathetic and parasympathetic. We have the automatic response, and then we have the responses in our body that we can take over. I don't have to say to myself, breathe, breathe, breathe. My mind does that. My brain does that. Those very primitive parts of our brain make sure that we're breathing without having to worry about it. So I don't have to think about breathing, but I can think about breathing. I can make a choice to think about breathing. So if you haven't ever done belly breathing, it's a very simple technique to learn and one of the easiest ways you can lower your anxiety. One of the most simple, cheapest ways. I mean, there are plenty of people who pay lots of money for medications and therapists and everything else when they should start with breathing. I'm not saying the others might not be necessary. I'm just saying you start with the easiest intervention, breathing. So the way to teach yourself is to lie down. Lie down on a couch, a bed, the floor, wherever is comfortable. Put a hand over your chest. Put a hand over your belly button. So one hand in the middle of your chest, right over your breastbone, and the other right over your belly button. And then you figure out how to breathe so that the only hand that moves up and down is the hand that is over your belly button. The other hand should remain flat and still. And once you figured out how to do that, once you've relearned those stomach muscles how to do that, you have to reteach them because we have been taught for so many years, stand up straight, hold in your stomach, stand with your chest out, and we do all those things automatically that we tend not to belly breathe. We've taught ourselves out of that. One of the benefits that people get out of yoga and meditation is simply learning to breathe appropriately and correctly again on how to get oxygen to their system and, oh, by the way, how to calm their body down and not have the fear response dominate their life. Okay, so hack number 8, and probably if you really just want to do 2 hacks, hack number 1, take action. Hack number 8, breathe properly, belly breathe, and you have it done. But let's add another one. I want you to kind of decide which of these acronyms for fear makes sense to you. You remember, fear, F-E-A-R. Fear has a number of acronyms that people have talked about, and they all give us a little different message. False evidence appearing real is one acronym. False evidence appearing real. We start seeing things out there, and we interpret them as being threats when they're not. How about false expectations about reality? We have this idea of how things should be, and when they're not going easy or not going the way, we have a fear response. Or how about false expectations appearing real, that we have these expectations that are built in our head or that we have presumed that others have for us, and we make them look real. Or how about false experiences appearing real? How about feeling excited and ready? I like that one because the interesting thing about fear is it is the exact same chemical composition in the body as excited. Fear and excitement are the same thing. I've noticed that you think about it at an amusement park. You know, you're getting on a roller coaster and one person is just excited about taking that ride and the other is scared to death of the ride. Bodily, they're doing the same thing. They're having the same adrenaline rush. It's just that one is exhilarated by that and the other is reading that as something to fear. I've noticed the same thing when I do scuba diving. Especially beginning divers are excited about that trip, but they get fearful. I get excited about it, but I've also mitigated the risk and understand what I'm getting into. And so I read my same bodily response as they read as fear, I read as excitement. And so a good one to remember is feeling excited and ready. When you're feeling fear, to remember that it's feeling excited and ready if you choose to see it that way. How about finding excuses and reasons? Man, that's a powerful one, right? The fact that our fears keep us from doing what is most important in our life is where we see that a lot of times that finding excuses and reasons is what fear gives us. A way out. Oh, I don't think I better do that. That makes me a little frightened, right? That's not what we say to ourselves, but that's what we say to ourselves. And so seeing it really is just excuses and reasons. And reasons are just excuses. Or how about this? Frantic effort to avoid reality. You know, something, life is moving us in a certain way and we have a fear response because we don't want to go that way. But what if we need to go that way? What if that's where life is calling us? What if life is calling us and the way we respond is by saying, oh, no, 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 I can't go there. And yet that's where we need to go. Or how about future events appearing real? Or future events already ruined. What I love about those two things is the fact that fear is about the future. It may be that you pull the, well, this happened in the past, so this might happen in the future. But it's about the future. It's not about the present moment. And not only is it about the present moment, not only is it about the future instead of the present moment, but it ruins what's already out there. You know, where we're moving towards. We lose that capacity of moving in any way towards that. So I love that. Future events appearing real or future events already ruined. If you think of future events appearing real, it's as if you know what's going to happen, right? But the other one is that you're going to ruin it with the fear. Okay, so remembering those acronyms is a good way of bringing reality and a little lightness to understanding your fear, that you don't have to be so caught up in it. Okay, the 10th hack is simply this. Fear is. It just is. So accept it and move on. But remember that fear is not your friend. It's telling you how to live small. It's never your friend, with one exception, and that's the times when you truly are endangered. And at those points, you want that part of your mind to say, hey, you need to stop. You need to pull back. You need to not do this, or at least you need to take some precautions. But other than that, to remember that fear is not your friend, as it whispers it in your ear, unless you turn it around and say, fear is going to be the compass bearing. I'm going to do more things. I'm going to move every day towards something that makes me a little fearful. I'm going to take a little step. I'm going to use hack number one, take action. And while I'm doing it, hack number eight, I'm going to breathe. And by the way, I'm going to remember that fear stands for false evidence appearing real, or false expectations about reality, or false expectations appearing real, or false experiences appearing real, or feeling excited and ready, or finding excuses and reasons, or frantic effort to avoid reality, or future events appearing real, or future events already ruined. Okay, those are the mind hacks. Those are the fear hacks that you can use to kind of pull back from those fears and find another way through. I'll bet you have some yourself. I would love to hear what hacks you have for fear. If you want to, if you're on the blog, if you're on Thriveology.com, you can just leave a comment right below this. But if you're not, you can email me, and I'd love to talk about those in a future episode. Just email podcast@thriveology.com. Thriveology is T-H-R-I-V-E, ology, O-L-O-G-Y.com, straight across, thriveology.com. The art and science of thriving is what Thriveology is about. I would love to hear how you hack your own fears. And more than that, I would love to hear if there are other topics you would love for us to talk about on this. And until next time, I wish you the best. This is Lee Balcom with the Thriveology Podcast.
Been listening to the Thriveology Podcast. Thank you for listening. If you want more information, visit us at Thriveology.com or at ThriveologyMagazine.com. Remember that Thriveology is spelled T-H-R-I-V-E-O-L-O-G-Y. It's your life. Time to live it.